The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I'm your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews for and about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment and comment line is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be part of the show. If you're an IT professional and listen to The Force Field, chances are you run your own business. If so, whether you realize it or not, technically, you are an entrepreneur. During the last 2 years, we talked with many professionals on The Force Field who used their knowledge in the field to do something different or innovative, shared it with others, and monetized or built a business around it. They didn't just start a business. They took their ideas, energy, and initiative to create new products and services to benefit both their own businesses and the businesses of their peers. As I said before, some of my favorite discussions on the show are those with entrepreneurs who innovate, push the envelope, and do something different with the technology in their business, not just because they're doing something new, but because they can be an inspiration to the rest of us to explore new concepts and apply them to our own businesses so we can realize our potential to innovate as well. This week, we're going to talk with a very special guest who is, by trade, an entrepreneur. He will tell us how he started a new kind of platform that changed the way many IT service companies, vendors, and professionals do business. In fact, his enterprise was the catalyst that inspired me to create this show, which is about the business side of IT. His is a story about how hard work, dedication, and a solid plan can bring success to those of us who are willing to go all the way. His example serves as an inspiration to entrepreneurs everywhere. And today, we're going to meet him and hear his story. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. Microsoft has announced the release of SQL Server 2008. In an announcement posted in the TechNet Flash newsletter sent to subscribers August 6th, the company invited beta testers to try out the release-to-market versions of Microsoft's Relational Database Management System for evaluation. According to an overview published in TechNet magazine, the new version of Microsoft SQL Server offers enhancements, many new features, and better performance. Microsoft SQL Server 2008 RTM is now available for download at technet.microsoft.com/en-us/subscriptions/default.aspx. If you don't want to type all that in the address bar of your browser, simply click on the link in the show notes in the RSS feed for this episode. I know, SQL Server, SQL Server, tomato, tomato, call it what you will. Either way, it's still a database. Or database. Whatever. You decide. System Management News reports that IT jobs are alive, well, and growing strong. An article by Michelle Savage on page 1 in the August 1st issue cites a new survey by the American Electronics Association as evidence that jobs within the IT industry pay well and are in great demand. However, although the report was released by the AEA in June of this year, it is based on survey data the organization gathered in 2006. You can read the article in the August 1st issue of System Management News. A single issue of System Management News is $9.95, but a subscription is free to professionals who qualify. If you are an IT professional and would like a free subscription to System Management News, you can subscribe at theforcefield.tradepub.com/free/SMNS, or simply click on the link in the show notes in the RSS feed for this episode. Californians may get a break from their cell phone companies. A big one. Late last month, a Superior Court judge in Alameda County ruled that cell phone carriers that charge customers early termination fees for canceling their contracts did so in violation of state law. In a class action lawsuit against Sprint Nextel that challenged the charging of early termination fees on contracts, the judge ruled that the practice was against the law and ordered the company to pay over $18 million to Sprint customers in California. Of course, Sprint plans to appeal the ruling, but if it stands, it could be the beginning of a nationwide consumer revolt. There are other such lawsuits across the country that challenge the fees, and this ruling, while only a preliminary one, invites more of the same. Cell phone companies do not like this at all. In fact, they are heavily lobbying the Federal Communications Commission to regulate the fee and protect cell phone carriers from future lawsuits. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin has already publicly proposed an initiative to prorate the fees during the period of the service contract. Sprint Nextel claims the charges are reasonable and necessary to offset the cost of the cell phones offered in the contract, which they maintain are sold to users below cost. However, the popular opinion among cell phone users, and apparently that of the judge herself, is that the fees are in place to discourage users from dropping the service and switching to another carrier. If the sole reason for early cancellation fees is to offset the cost of the phone, there's a simple solution. Sell the phone for what it's worth and ditch the fees. So, what if you buy your own phone and just order service? Does Sprint Nextel promote open monthly service or a contract without cancellation fees? Apparently not, or at least not that I could locate when I searched the Sprint Nextel website. I did find one thing. Included in their terms and conditions, which is located behind links buried within the individual service plans listed on their site, is a clause stating that by signing the agreement, Sprint Nextel customers waive the right to pursue or join a class action lawsuit. And that's the news in the Force Field.
This is Linux Chick from the Alterna Geek Podcast over at alternageek.com. At the Alterna Geek Podcast, Tech Monkey and I cover tech news, how-tos, hardware, software, and gadget reviews, Linux, Windows, Mac, and all things Internet. Stop by alternageek.com and take a listen and join in the conversation on the website or send us an email letting us know your take on things at podcast@alternageek.com. Alterna Geek, we're not your typical geeks. Alterna Geek is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Josh Jones, co-host of the CS TechCast. If you're looking for cutting-edge technology news and information, then check out CS TechCast. Each week, we bring you the latest technology news and trends from around the industry, in addition to interviews with the best and brightest in technology. Stop by cstechcast.com and check us out.
You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk or leave a comment to use in an upcoming episode, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8. That's 407-278-5698. Or through Skype at Savoya Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field Podcast Episodes page at theforcefield.net and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free. And you can't beat free. So call in and dare to enter the force field. In 2003, a new web-based platform was launched that changed the way IT service companies and service professionals do business. The company was called ComputerRepair.com, known today as OnForce. If you're a longtime listener of the Force Field, you probably know the company, and chances are you are already a member of the OnForce platform and community. For those not familiar with OnForce, it's a service platform, or, as they call it, a marketplace, where IT companies, known as service buyers, solicit work to field technicians, consultants, and other IT professionals, also known as service providers, or, more recently, service professionals. The company acts as the go-between, routing work orders for contract labor from the buyers to a list of available or chosen service professionals within the job's designated service area. The buyer prepays for the work, and OnForce holds the money until the job is complete, then releases it to the service professional, ensuring the work is performed and everyone is paid. OnForce offers a level of security and convenience to both parties that seems made for the web. The system is such an interesting concept that it has prompted many other companies to offer similar, and in some cases nearly identical, platforms of their own. The concept was created by Jeffrey Leventhal, the founder and original CEO of ComputerRepair.com. Jeff is, by profession, an entrepreneur. His story serves as an inspiration to entrepreneurs everywhere who dream of bringing their ideas and innovations for new products and services to the marketplace. This week, we're going to talk with Jeff, learn how he came up with the idea for OnForce, find out how long it took him and his team to develop the platform, and hear how it first went live as we begin with part one of a two-part story, the story of OnForce. And we're talking to Jeff Leventhal. Jeff, welcome to the Force Field.
Oh, thanks, Rick.
Jeff, a lot of our listeners are also OnForce providers, and most of them know who you are. But for those who don't, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I was the founder of OnForce, and what I do is I build companies. It's a fun thing to do, and I feel lucky to be able to do it. I've spent the last 17 years starting four IT service companies, the last one being OnForce, and that was started in 2003. So I guess in a broad term, you'd call me an entrepreneur.
Well, that sounds like you fit the term to a T.
Yes, I think so.
What was your first company? How did you start doing this?
Well, the first company is actually, if you go way back, it was in high school and I did home improvements. I built decks behind people's houses. I power washed decks and I did some small renovations and maintenance around people's homes. And I did that for 3 years and I actually built a company that I sold.
So it's pretty much what you do is you start companies, you build them up, you sell them for profit, and then you move on to your next venture.
I come up with ideas. I try to create value. I work harder than I think anybody can imagine how hard somebody could work at doing something. Learn a lot in the process, and often what you think you're going to start doing and what you end up doing are different. So I try to have a lot of adaptability in that process, but eventually hard work, perseverance, and a little vision, at the end is a company. And hopefully it's worth a little bit of money.
And so what you do is you pretty much come up with the idea, you flesh out a business model. Do you pretty much invest in it with mostly your own money, or do you drum up money from venture capitalists, angels?
When I approach a business problem, I try to figure out what it is that I need to execute on that idea. And OnForce was a venture-backed company, and we were very grateful to have venture backing. It is a privilege and an opportunity, although it comes with certain other characteristics. But I don't think that you necessarily need money to build a business. What you need is persistence and extreme hard work and a very low overhead. So I don't write up a piece of paper and say, hey, here's my idea, and I need money to do it. I write my idea, and I say, here's what I want to do, and here's how I'm going to go do it no matter what. And if I get money, great, and if I don't, that's okay also. My first three companies, all my companies were started without money at the onset, but I did bring in capital at various stages in different companies that I've built. And, so capital's not a prerequisite, but sometimes it makes sense to bring it in if you think it can help you execute a marketing plan faster, or if you've got some fixed costs up front that you need to deal with to get a business executed.
Of course, the most important thing here is vision, obviously.
You know, I think vision matters. I think people who don't have vision can glean ideas from other people. I think that you've seen a lot of European companies take very well-executed U.S. business plans, particularly in the venture community, and execute them there. So maybe these people didn't have vision, but they had hard work, or they had some smart, or they had a slightly different twist on an idea. So vision is one of the ingredients, but not a requirement.
How did the idea for computerrepair.com come about?
Well, in my instance, the four companies that I've started have all culminated from the prior company and listening carefully to customers and kind of watching behavior. So I'll take you through what I've done and how I got to OnForce. Mm-hmm. I had started a company in 1992 called LandSafe, Local Area Network Safety, and this was a remote network monitoring firm where we monitored data equipment for large companies. And people were grateful for our service, and they liked it and they valued it. But when we found a problem with our monitoring software, they said, hey, can you solve it? And actually solving the problem turned out to be a bigger issue. You'd think that large IT service companies can solve problems anywhere in the country quickly, and the answer to that is that they can't, and they often use other contractors around the country to deliver services. So in 1995, after having sold my first company, LandSafe, I started a company called Remote Logics, remote for remote locations and logics for logistics. And I was trying to figure out how to just solve problems for clients everywhere in the country. And that company grew from 1995 to 1998 to about 130 employees and did a significant amount of revenue. And our business model was quite simple. We ordered the phone books from every city. The internet wasn't where it is today in 1995. And we built lists and networks and contacts with IT service providers around the country. And we sold our services to the headquarters and said, look, wherever you have a branch office, send us the service call, and we'll make sure somebody shows up and performs the service. And this was highly valued. They needed this desperately, and the company grew quickly. But essentially, Rick, what we learned in that business model was that we made about $20 a service event. At the end of the day, no matter how it went, we charged our customer $100, we paid the service provider $70, we covered our overhead, we made about $20 a service call. And I said to myself, wouldn't it be great if we can just get the guy who needs the service to speak directly with the person who wants to do the service and kind of get out of the way? And the technology to build that kind of matching platform couldn't have been done without the internet and without things that eBay had pioneered. Mm-hmm. To go back to what you said before about vision, you look at eBay, and I was highly inspired by what eBay had done for things and contemplated, can this be done for services? Can we do a matching system just like this but for services? Mm-hmm. So after my non-compete expired, 1998, I sold the company, and I sold Remote Logics, and I had a 5-year agreement not to work in that business. And in 2003, when that agreement expired, I started OnForce. And the goal was, can they match a buyer and a seller of service?
Pretty much cut out the middleman then.
You know, cut out the middleman, cut out steps that didn't need to be there. What were we really adding in terms of value to that service equation? For people to call me and for me to call you, that kind of just adds more spaghetti to the mess. Mm-hmm. So getting rid of non-value added SG&A. You know, selling general administrative expense costs and making it more streamlined. So, yes, taking out the middleman, but adding value on both sides at the same time. Sometimes middlemen are very good, and you need them.
Understood. You said that you started it in, it was in 2003, I think, is when you really started to build it to get it ready to go online. You pretty much had to sit on the idea. You had the idea sometime back, but you had to sit on it for a few years before that non-compete clause expired to be able to do it. What did you do in the interim?
Oh, I did a host of personal fun stuff. I built a house. I got married. I met my wife in 1998. I got back into shape, having built Remote Logics. It certainly took a toll on me. I gained a few pounds and wanted to shed those. Did a few races. I also did consulting work for other computer service companies in helping them either buy or sell computer service entities. And so a whole host of things like that. I actually moved from New York to Florida during that period of time to see how I would like living in Florida and what I thought of it. And so actually OnForce, computer repair then, was started in Florida. But it was a great 5-year period, a combination of work, fun, play, and family.
Now, when you started On Force, you had built or you had assembled a team of people there to help you get the business going. I believe Matt Anderson was also part of that team, correct?
Yep. We had kind of a dream team in the beginning. Gabe Miano, Bob Hausman, Matt Anderson, Mark McIntyre, Glenn Nortman. The team came together over the first 9 months. When we first started, we put up a website, computerrepair.com. It was a very simple listing service. Register as a provider, people would be able to search you. But while that was up and running, we were behind the scenes building what would ultimately become the OnForce platform. And Gabe Miano headed that up. He recruited an incredible team of programmers, Chris Lewis, David Exby. These guys are famous today in the open source community, and they really set records and pushed the envelope of what can be done with applications. So I got to say, without that team, OnForce never would have happened. And if I take credit for anything in the beginning there, it was helping get the right team in place.
Mm-hmm. How did you meet Matt?
Matt was introduced through a friend of a friend, and most of the people that I work with are people who I meet through other friends or other business connections. I don't really hire too many people who I meet through a newspaper ad or things of that nature. So Matt was a friend of a friend in South Florida and a brilliant guy. So as soon as I met Matt, I knew that in somehow, some way, some shape, I wanted to work with him.
How long was the project in development overall? How long was it between the time you began to develop it and the time that you launched the site?
The development of it was just a lifetime of work. It wasn't like, hey, here's an idea and let's just build it. It was a lifetime of experience and work that went into the thought process that became the system. From the time we wrote the first line of code to the time we took our first work order was a 9-month period. And I have to say that the platform, in my opinion, is never finished. It always needs to be improved. It's not a piece of software you put in a box and ship. It's a living, breathing system every single day.
You mentioned Gabe and the rest of the team there. You brought on Jack Barcroft a little before you actually launched there. And last year I had the pleasure of interviewing Jack on the Force Field in episode 9 called, of course, You Know Jack. And he was telling us about the first work order that came through and how it was picked up and how exciting it was to watch it all happen.
And
after all the work you put into developing the concept and all the work and preparation leading up to the event, when the first work order was actually picked up, what was going through your mind?
Well, first I was sleeping. we turned the platform up on at 3 in the morning, and some people were for turning it on and some people were not for turning it on. We flipped the switch on. It was a long night, and we had gone to sleep. We had done a lot of prep work up to that time, and we said, you know what, at the end of the day, let's not be an R&D company anymore. Let's be in business. We turned the platform on, and lo and behold, the next day, a work order, that night, or maybe 4 or 5 in the morning, a work order came in from Italy. I'm sure Jack told you the details of this.
Italy, yeah.
It actually came in from Italy for an AS400 in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. It was a very challenging work order. It was one, I don't think we had anybody in Puerto Rico at the time, and 2, we knew nothing about AS400s. And 3, the guys in Italy typed the work order out in a way that was very difficult to understand.
Oh, boy.
But, nonetheless, we were grateful for it, and we were committed to getting it done successfully, which we did. Mm-hmm. It felt great because when you're building a company or you're building a system, and when you're an entrepreneur in almost any category, people are often telling you, that idea will never work. You shouldn't do that. That's silly. Why would you leave your job to go do that? You get a lot of negative energy from the people around you. Some people might just be jealous, or they might really believe that your idea is genuinely bad. So it was very gratifying, of course, to say that the first work order came in and we were successfully able to deliver it and that we became a business instead of an R&D company.
That kind of negativity does permeate. In some ways, I guess when you're starting off, it's a little bit disconcerting to have other people around you going, your idea, that'll never fly. And why are you wasting your time on that? Or you should just go get a regular job.
Right.
In other ways, it does help balance things out because it kind of keeps you rooted. Because some entrepreneurs, when they get an idea, and I know me, I get an idea sometimes, it's like, mm-hmm. Wow, this is great. I got to go out and do this. I've got to get this done. And not thinking it all through until later.
Right.
And then I'm thinking, well, wait, I've got to deal with this and this and this. So maybe it's not such a great idea after all. But some of that negativity, although it doesn't help, your countenance at the time. Sometimes it can help keep their feet on the ground to keep them from getting too flighty on things. So I guess there is a purpose for it.
It is. You know, look, it does a lot of things. One, it shakes some people out of the game. Some people believe those people that their idea isn't good and they don't become entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Maybe they shouldn't be if they're going to be swayed that a friend is telling them it's a bad idea and that's going to sway them not to be in business for themselves. And that's the kind of person that's not going to make it the distance and have the discipline and perseverance to become an entrepreneur and build a successful company. But it's also important to listen to what people are saying. You don't have to do everything that people say, but to, hey, why is this person saying this? Is it a customer that's saying it? Is it a friend that's saying it? And why? Maybe they know something about you that you don't know. But nonetheless, if you have conviction, if you have passion, if you have perseverance and belief in your idea and in yourself, that should override everything else and get you through that self-doubt period. I think all entrepreneurs go through a period of, am I working on the right idea? Is this the kind of thing that somebody's going to buy? I used to drive some people in our company crazy by saying, well, what if we never do a work order? And they were like, are you kidding? We're going to definitely do work orders. It's just a matter of how many and when. But there's a period of time where you go, is this crazy or is this for real? Mm-hmm. It's part of being an entrepreneur. You need to get through that.
And one of the nice things about that sort of situation is when it does take off and fly, you can turn around and you don't really necessarily have to say, I told you so, because it really says it for you.
Yeah, it's not about I told you so, because if I say, Rick, here's my idea today, certainly the idea is going to evolve over the 9-month period that you build the system or where you might be in a year. So with all the feedback that I'm getting from people, positive, negative, indifferent, that shapes what the ultimate item may look like. So, again, it's important to listen. I was taught a phrase by a very successful person, 2 ears and 1 mouth. Listen twice as much as you speak. And, you know, how does all of that listening influence what the ultimate outcome might be? Maybe people are right. By the way, the OnForce business model was originally geared towards the Fortune 500. That was a complete mistake that I made. And by listening to key people in the service community, the business was reshaped to serve the service provider community. So there were things in my business model that initially were probably incorrect, or maybe there were better lower hanging fruit areas to go after. So it's important to listen and take it all in and interpret it and re-execute it.
Next week, we're going to continue our discussion with Jeff and hear more about the early days of OnForce. We'll discuss the OnForce forums and how they helped influence the direction of the platform after it was launched, learn why he decided to step down as CEO, and find out where he thinks OnForce ranks among his accomplishments as an entrepreneur, as we conclude with part two of a two-part story, the story of OnForce. Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For The Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May The Force Field be with you.